chandi. Most ballet plays were vehicles for improvisation, a skeleton plot, a framework of a situation, usually very familiar to the audience, on which the performers created the momentary and irreproducible drama. The text of such a play could be written on a scrap of paper, since it was nothing but a list of the characters and a set of dialogue lines called pegs or hinge bolts, perhaps 10 or 20 in all. These peg lines were invariable, both in wording and in the order they were spoken. Everything that was said and done in the intervals between them was up to the players. For the audience, much of the tension and pleasure of the performance was in the build-up towards these key lines, familiar from other performances, but always arrived at differently, from another direction. Plot elaboration could be so extreme that the pegs were embedded in a long dramatic performance having only tangential reference to the original plot. Or they might be the pivots of a brilliant flow of language if the troupe was strong on poetic improvisation. Or they might provide almost the whole spoken text of a performance by a troupe of actor-dancers playing the piece Yedao by moving, that is, principally in mime and dance. The performance I attempt to describe here was given by a troupe from Telinana, a young group praised mainly for their music and dancing. The play was put on in a big barn loft in Sinshan as part of the festivities of the summer dance. Lights had been rigged up to spotlight the stage area and were used very effectively in creating both space and mood. The audience participated in the play at the beginning and was entirely silent and intent by the end. Like most ballet drama, this play, Chandi, is symbolical or allegorical, generalizing life. The resemblance of the plot to one of the great biblical stories is striking, but so are the differences. The name Chandi means wood rat, the native western rat, a pretty little animal which builds a big, elaborate nest of sticks and grass in which it may store a collection of objects which it seems to value on purely aesthetic grounds, and in which mice, snakes, and other creatures may reside, sharing the wood rat's hospitality. End of side 6. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over. The traditional author of Chandi was Hokai, King Snake of Chumo, a figure as old and insubstantial as our Homer, and not blind like Homer, but deaf, to whom about half the pegline plays were ascribed. In this attempt to describe the action and present the text, the peglines are italicized. To see what the actors had to work with, the reader can read only those lines, skipping all the rest. Chandi, a performance. The audience, 40 or 50 people, sat on the loft floor on rugs or pillows they had brought with them, or on some old straw bales that had been arranged as seats, or to provide seat backs. A man and woman of the miller's art of Sinshan had rigged up and operated the lights. A strong, large spot formed the left stage area, a weaker one the right stage area, and their oval interlap formed the hinge. The darkness outside and behind these areas was deep enough to make movements off stage undistracting. The musicians sat behind the stage area, outside the light, just visible. The music was almost continuous throughout the performance. After the beginning tone had been played for some minutes and the audience had quieted down, Chandi entered from the left, a handsome man in the prime of life, tall, magnificently dressed. Over black trousers and a full-sleeved cotton shirt, he wore a long ceremonial vest of blue, violet, and green, heavy with embroidery, and over that an incredibly delicate and splendid feather cloak, a treasure of the serpentine heiamas of Sinshan, lent for the performance. This majestic cloak flowed and swayed from his shoulders as he came striding in, his arms stretched out in an embracing gesture, and turned forward to greet the rising sun. Chandi. Italics, heya, hey, heya, 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 beautiful you shine upon the valley. End italics. He looked down from the imagined sunrise at the faces of the audience with a warm and genial smile. His voice was resonant, pleasant, and full of energy. Chandi. So you are here, people of my town, beautifully walking, kindly of face, speaking gently. This is a good morning. The audience responded with the customary greeting, So you are here, Chandi. They spoke quietly, amused, and one woman added, May the day go well for you, Chandi. Chandi, in the evening of this long day, I am to dance the summer, so before I go into the fields, I want to practice that dance. The musicians struck up one of the intricate and stately heron dances of the summer wakwa, and Chandi danced alone on the left stage, energetic and graceful, like some gorgeous mythical bird in the iridescent floating cloak of feathers. As the dance ended, the first chorus, five people, came on and took up positions around stage left, townsfolk going to a day's work in the fields. With a final great gesture, which made him seem to fly up in the air for a moment, the audience gasped. Chandi swept off the feather cloak and tossed it to someone waiting outside the lighted area. The dance was over, and Chandi also went off to work. He mimed weeding and hoeing with the chorus. They talked about the weather, and there was some banter about local doings and personalities, which I could not follow, but which got a great response and some back talk from the audience. Then a peg line was dropped in, casually. Chorus one, a man. Italics. How fine Chandi's corn, how tall and broad-leaved, already tasseled. End italics. Chorus two, a woman. He's a wise farmer, Chandi is, knowledgeable and careful. Chorus one. Yes, he seems to go the right way. What a good bit of ground his household works there. Chorus three, a man. That's not the only good ground in his family. The luck that comes his way. To be married to Dansaedo. She sees the rainbow. To plow and weed and tend and harvest that bit of ground in the gardens of the night. Chorus four, a woman. Shut up, stupid. What kind of dirty talk is that? Chorus three. I'm envious. That's all. I envy him. Chorus five, a woman. The beautiful children of that marriage, rainbow people indeed. I envy him such children. Chorus four. Shut up! Shut up! High winds fan forest fires! Chandi now came closer to the other gardeners and leaned on his hoe as he spoke. It was some time before I realized that there was, in fact, no hoe. Chandi. Listen, I don't mind. I couldn't help but hear what you were saying. Italics, the wind was blowing my way, end italics. But it's true what you were saying. I try to be careful and thoughtful, to do things at the right time in the right way. But other people are just as careful, just as mindful, and they aren't given so much as I am. I don't know how it is. My mother's house is beautiful and dignified, as is the house of my wife. My parents are generous and kindly people, and the two people who have made me a father are intelligent and notable. My daughter, already a singer among the doctors, and my son, still wearing undyed clothing, a delightful and promising boy. Of Dansaedo, what praise can I speak? She is the swallow above the pools at evening. She is the first rain of autumn, and the wild almond flower of early spring. Her household is noble, a river of gifts flowing. In this household the ewes bear twin lambs yearly. The cows are wise and strong, the bullocks patient. The earth we plant is richer every year. The trees we gather from drop olives like hailstones. Italics. All this is given me, end italics. How have I lived that this has been so? Chorus two, italics. All you have been given, you have given, Chandi, end italics. Chorus one, yes, Chandi is truly generous. Chorus five, the feather cloak he gave his house. Chorus two, corn to the granaries, fleeces to the art. Chorus three, gold coins to musicians, copper to actors. This was spoken archly and got a laugh. Chorus one. Everything in his house is fine and sound, well made and well used, plentiful and impressive, and the doors are always open to his friends and townsfolk. Chorus three. Italics. Indeed, you are a wealthy man, Chandi. End italics. Chorus five. Italics. The generous heart is wealth itself. End italics. So they say. The translation of these two pegs is particularly weak. Ambad means wealth, wealthy, to give, and generosity. The words double on themselves intricately in these lines. During this scene, the only music was the continuing tone, the faint, slightly varied background note of the great horns, hombuta. Now the other instruments began to play and continued for the rest of the performance, softly under dialogue, but filling and creating pauses with held and percussive notes. Chandi, you make me feel foolish, my friends. I want to do something for you. I want to give you what you want, what you like. Chorus 4. Really, he's such a nice fellow, isn't he? Chorus 1. Yes, nobody could dislike him, our Chandi. Chandi, italics. What can I give you? End italics. I hope you'll share this corn when it ripens. This plot of ground is so easy to work, I wondered if you'd like to use it next season. Oh, house sister, I meant to tell you that we've got a lot of feathers saved again in our household and thought of making another cloak for the obsidian, for the blood lodge, if you think it would be appropriate. Cousin, Don Saedo has been spinning that white wool our sheep gave us in the spring shearing, and I remember you spoke of needing white wool. Fine or heavy? You know how well Don Saedo spins. He talked on, the music growing loud enough to half cover his voice, the people of the first chorus crowding around him as he talked and handed out things, all affectionate, friendly, but a little hectic. While this was going on, the second chorus began to enter from the right. Four people, barefoot, walking stiffly erect, wearing dark hoods and tight, dark clothes, like those of the mourners at the World Dance. They came one after the other, slowly, and stood waiting in a line across the right stage. The first one, standing at the right edge of the hinge, spoke in a flat, sexless voice, heralded by a shivering note on the tawando. Second chorus, 1. Chandi! Busy with their give and take, Chandi and his friends paid no attention. The dark figure spoke the name again. The third time the name was spoken, Chandi looked around over his shoulder and then came laughing from the group, his arms full of something. Chandi, italics. Here, friend, take it, please, end italics. I have too much. The dark figure remained motionless, hands at its sides. After a loud metallic chord from the musicians, there was a dead pause. Second chorus, 1. Don Saedo was measuring oil, fine olive oil, from the old trees of her family. A flame leapt up, from where no one knows, blown by what wind. It burned, that oil. It burned. Her hair burned, her clothing. She burned alive, a torch. She ran in flames from the house in flames. Italics, it is all burnt. She is dead. End italics. The hooded figure crouched down in the mourning posture and huddled, head down, swaying at Chandi's feet, just across the hinge from him. Chandi stood motionless. Slowly his arms dropped to his sides. The first chorus drew away from him, muttering among themselves. First chorus. Burned? Don Saedo? That great household? The whole house? Everything? Burned alive? Chandi, in a great outburst, italics. My daughter, my son, end italics. First chorus, 1. They're all right. They must be all right, Chandi. First chorus, 2. They weren't in the house. Only Don Saedo died in the fire. The other people got out. First chorus, 5. But the house is gone, burned to the foundation stones. First chorus, 3. Everything in it burned to ash. Chandi took a bewildered step or two as if to return to the town. Chandi, oh, Don Saedo, beautiful woman, kind woman, wife of my heart. Italics, cruel, cruel, cruel. End italics. His voice rose to this thrice-repeated word, the hinge of the play, in a wild outcry. Then he stood again as if bewildered by his own passion of grief. He looked around painfully at the others, and at last said with dignity, Chandi, I will go. I will go now to sing for you, Don Saedo, to sing with you as you leave me. But I need our children with me now. May they come to me. Chandi's son and daughter now entered from the left. At the same time, the second dark figure of the second chorus began to approach the center of the stage, its right hand stretched forward. Chandi's son went to his father and they embraced, but the daughter walked past him, turning to look at him, but going on past him to meet the dark figure, take its hand, and go with it off stage to the right into the dark. As she did so, Chandi cried out. Chandi, italics. Where is she? Where is she going? Where has she gone? End italics. Second chorus one, crouching and swaying as before. She saw her mother run from the house, burning, burning alive, and the sight was beyond her endurance. She took poison in the doctor's lodge, fearing madness, and is dead. First chorus one, whispering, she is dead. First chorus four, whispering, look there, she is dead. The members of the first chorus, the townspeople, had drawn somewhat away from Chandi, leaving him standing alone with his son. There was music with a hard, fast drum beat, while Chandi slowly took off the embroidered vest and put it on his son's shoulders. When he spoke, his voice was shocking in its softness. Chandi, daughter, little daughter, could you not wait? Patience would have been kinder. There were those who needed you. Come with me now, child, my son. Stay with me. Help me sing for them, with them, your mother, your sister. Come with me now. But the third of the four dark figures, a child, was coming towards them, inexorable. Chandi's son let go his hand and stood still, gazing, then moved to meet the dark figure and to take its hand and follow it slowly off stage right into the darkness. The continuing tone was very loud. Chandi, please do not die, my son. Stay with me. Second chorus one, speaking from the crouching posture still. The illness was always in him, hidden. Now it is becoming his life. In a month he will be dead. In a few days he will be dead. The doctors have no healing for him. This day he will die. He is dying now. First chorus four, italics. Chandi's son is dead. End italics. The five members of the first chorus drew yet farther away from Chandi. He slowly crouched down till he was facing the dark figure in the same posture. He lowered his head to the ground, rubbed his forehead on the ground, and tore at his hair. The music was loud and intense, the drums and tawando drowning out the continuing tone, and Chandi's voice rose and fell in a half-melodious, keening howl. As the music quieted, Chandi crouched motionless and at last stood up heavily. He took off his shirt and then his shoes and stood barefoot and half-naked, looking 20 years older. Chandi, italics. I will go back to my mother's house, living there as a son, end italics, working for the people of that household as best I can. The fourth of the dark figures was approaching him as he spoke, and now addressed him in the same flat, high, uncanny tone as the first. Second chorus four. They are all dead now, those people of your mother's household, or have gone away to other houses, other towns. Italics. Other people live now in those rooms. End italics. There is no one of your kinfolk in that place. Chandi. It is true. I must live alone. But I have been ill for a long time now. Would it not be better for me to die? The fourth dark figure made no reply, but crouched down beside the first one. Chandi. I will live alone, then, as best I can, working for the Hayamas. Oh, but my arms are heavy. He began to mime working in the gardens, as at the beginning of the action, but very laboriously. The members of the first chorus also went back to work, all towards the left front of the left stage, while Chandi was alone towards the back and near the hinge. The light had dimmed unobtrusively, and the music had a plangent, yearning quality. First chorus three. Look at old Chandi digging at that adobe, hard as roof tile. Chorus one, now speaking like an old man, while chorus three's voice had taken on an adolescent quality. It used to be good land, a good piece of ground there. He didn't look after it. Chorus two. Oh, I don't know. He looks after it as well as he can, sick and lame as he is, and people help him after all. But the creek cut off that bend there, and he didn't irrigate enough. Chorus 3. Somebody was saying he used to be very prosperous. Chorus 1. Well, and so he did. But nothing prospers for him these days, it seems. Chorus 4. That poor old cow, the brindle, she was the last of his family cattle in the herds, wasn't she? Chorus 2. Every lamb his ewes bore was Sevi. Chorus 4. Nothing he looks after bears, nothing he cares for grows. Chorus 5. It makes my back ache to see him trying to work there. He can hardly lift the hoe. Chorus 3. What does he bother trying to work for, anyhow? That corn won't bear. A stupid old man wasting work like that. Chorus 1. But what went wrong, after all? He used to be prosperous, as you said. Wealthy, generous, a river flowing. What went wrong? Chorus 3. I'll ask him. Hey, old Chandi, what did you do so that everything went wrong for you? Chandi, leaning on his hoe and speaking quietly and very slowly. Italics. My wife died. My household was destroyed. My children died before me. Illness came into me. No one of my mother's house was left living here. What I care for perishes. What I am given, I lose. What I gave is all I had, and it is gone. End italics. Chorus 3. It's no wonder you haven't any friends. Chandi. My people are the people of my house, the house of summer, the serpentine. Chorus 4. Well, of course, we'll go on looking after you. But I have to say this, it's hard to feel friendly or brotherly about a person who does everything wrong. With a friend, you feel at ease. You want to share everything. You can laugh together. Who can laugh with you? I want to burst into tears every time I see you. So I don't really want to see you. I wish I didn't have to. Chorus 5. It's true. In the old days, I used to be in love with you. I thought about you all the time. Now I never do. I've forgotten what your wife was named. Sickness has made you hideous. I don't like even to touch your hand. Chorus 1. Dansaedo was her name. Dansaedo. And when I see you, I always think of her dying so terribly. I don't want to think about that. Chorus 3. Italics. You turned the wheel too hard. End italics. Old man, that's the truth. You got what you asked for. Chandi. I asked for nothing. I gave. When, italics, was I ungenerous? End italics. Chorus 4. You were generous to a fault. Chandi, italics. How shall a human being live well, then? Chorus 1. If I knew that, I'd tell you. Chorus 3. What's the use of asking questions like that? Chorus 2. Nobody understands such things. Chandi, turning to the two crouching dark figures across the hinge. Italics. How was I to live my life well? Can you answer me? End italics. The two dark figures remained silent and motionless. The music clashed and jangled strangely. As the lights were brought lower so that they cast long shadows, the first of the two dark figures rose and walked slowly to the center back of the double stage. There it turned to face the audience, revealing under its dark hood a copper mask which caught the light in a startling ruddy flash, the setting sun. Chandi turned to face it, back to the audience. His arms came up in the broad, embracing gesture. Chandi, italics. Heya, hey, heya, heya, heya. Beautiful the day was in the valley. End italics. The dark figure crouched slowly down, stooping and so hiding the sun mask. The lights darkened further. Chandi. There are the stars shining. There is nothing between the stars. The dark dancing. Into the continuing tone, the musicians suddenly began to weave the tune of the heron dance. Stooping and half-naked, stiffly and painfully, Chandi began to dance the dance which he practiced in splendor in the first scene, but all the motions and turns were reversed, so that the dance carried him across the stage to the right. The last of the dark figures joined him, following his movements like a shadow. Together they vanished into the darkness. In the almost completely darkened, high, large room, the musicians held the ending tone until it died away very gradually into silence. After the performance, I asked a member of the cast if they varied the action and dialogue much from one performance to the next, and she replied, "Well, only to fit the evening or the town. This summer we're playing this play Clayface's Way." Clayface was the actor who played Chandi. She went on, "I saw Chandi in Wakwaha last year with Wind Deer. He raged and railed and went mad. He's an older actor. He can do that. Clayface is young to play Chandi, so he does it this way, very gently. I think it works. Maybe it goes too fast at the end, but the dances he does at the beginning and the end, they're very fine." I agreed with her. I asked some of the audience if they had seen widely different interpretations of this play, and found that they had. The action can be handled quite differently. For instance, the fire, suicide, and illness, which successively carried off Chandi's wife, daughter, and son in this version, can be one cataclysmic event, and the deaths could take place on stage if the actors want to harrow up the audience's feelings directly. The events of Chandi's fortunate and unfortunate years can be acted out and dwelt upon in any number of ways, and Chandi's response to them could be quite different from the complex tone of resignation that Clayface struck. However, Thorne said to me, "Even when his friends and the four house people answer his question, how to live well, still you don't know if their answers are right." I asked Clayface, who offstage turned out to be not more than 25, shy-mannered, soft-spoken, and not tall, if he thought Chandi died in hope or in despair. After thinking quite a while, he replied, "In pain. That's why his friends are afraid of him. But we don't have to be, because it's a play. So you see, that's what matters."